You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Pro Bowl vote is here. An awesome Pro Bowl starts with awesome players, and your vote helps decide who gets a spot on the AFC and NFC rosters. Show your love, cast your vote, and make sure your favorite players make it to the 2020 Pro Bowl. Vote today and be entered to win exclusive prizes at NFL.com/Pro Bowl vote. What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Mark Scran, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. Week 11 is upon us. Mm-hmm. So we're getting to like the whole Thanksgiving portion of the... I know we're still, what, a couple weeks away from Thanksgiving, but...
Thanksgiving is really weirdly late this year.
It's really late.
Yeah. It's really, really
late. What's today, Wednesday?
Today is Wednesday.
What are we, 2 weeks... From tomorrow.
Two weeks from tomorrow. Right. So that would make it, what, the 28th, I believe?
Yeah.
28th for Thanksgiving this year. Which is funny. I have, for whatever reason, a lot of friends whose birthday is on November 28th. Hmm. And they always sort of moan and complain that a lot of times their birthday falls on Thanksgiving. In fact, I once dated a girl who complained to me that her 21st birthday was on Thanksgiving Day. And so while everybody else for their 21st birthday got to go out and party and get drunk, she was, like, at home with her family and, like, you know.
Yeah.
Having a Thanksgiving day.
I mean, I guess you can get drunk at home with your family, but it's not necessarily as fun.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, you know, as kind of going out and, you know, I was in Vegas on my 21st birthday because mine's in the middle of the year. And,
oh, geez. You know, I was at some bar in New Haven, Connecticut. I think it was called Shooters or something like that.
Yeah.
And what I remember the most about that is throwing up into an empty tennis ball container in my buddy's back seat.
Ooh. Tennis ball.
That actually takes a level of skill. You know,
I'm impressed.
It was either all over his seats and floor, or into this thing. So I would puke into it, finish, throw it out.
I was gonna say you'd have to because it's not that big.
Go again.
Wow.
That was
You made a nice little smoothie there,
in the
tennis ball container.
I'm gonna throw up again.
Yikes.
Oh man. So on to past that note. Last week, we talked about way too early running backs this week. We'll talk some way too early wide receiver chat, just for those of you whose season may not be going the way you wanted and maybe have an eye toward 2020. We'll talk to Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus, get his thoughts on some of these running back issues that have popped up around the league in the last couple of weeks or so. And because it is Wednesday, we'll do some drop or knots after you've made some of your waiver wire claims and maybe you're trying to make some room on your roster, some guys that maybe you can clear out there a little bit. But before we do all that, go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, I heard you had a celebrity sighting recently.
I had a good one, yeah. And I only count the celebrity sightings when you're just out, you know, out in the wild. No, like, planned, like, I
out in the wild?
Out in
what?
The wild, yeah.
Where, like, in the mountains?
Well, some people, if at work somebody came in, like, doesn't count. Like, you have to be out and about.
Right. You just, like, see them randomly.
Out. Yes. Exactly. So I was lucky enough to be at the Kings Wild game yesterday because my girlfriend was
out in the wild.
No, there
exactly.
you go.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what you meant. I didn't even think of that. And we were leaving. The Kings won the game and going down the escalator. And there was Alfie Allen, who plays Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones. And he was wearing a gray, like, the alternate Kings jersey. And he had, like, a group of probably 6-7 people with him. And they were talking about their plans for what they were doing later on. And I didn't want to say his name and cause attention to him. I also didn't want to disrespect him by calling him Theon. So I did the next best thing, which was just... you know, lock eyes with him for as long as possible. As he wrote
so you
down
were a creep, basically.
I was, yeah. Yeah. I had because to me that was, for a show that obviously we all talk about it, like it's a big part of my life, and I was like to see him there, one of the, you know, main characters, probably one of the redeeming things to come out of the last season, I think, of Game of Thrones 2, to see him in person was pretty cool.
I wonder how much it pisses actors and actresses off when people... mention them by their...
refer to them by their character names?
So this happened like several years ago at NFL Network, and I don't exactly remember who it was, but John Ratzenberger was here. And if you're a Cheers fan like
me,
John Ratzenberger, who actually was in Star Wars by the way.
Yes.
He was one of the knob turners that was sort of, you know, I think it was
very early in his career.
So someone who was involved in sort of getting him from point A to point B or whatever thought his name was Cliff.
Was actually Cliff Clavin?
Because they didn't know who he was. And he kept calling him Cliff. And John Ratzenberger was pissed. Really pissed off. So, like, it's just, I wonder, like, how actors and actresses are like, you know, it's not actually my real name.
I think I would have asked Alfie, you know, do you regret killing John Wick's dog?
That too. Yeah. He's known for being like two playing two of like the worst characters in movies and television in recent time. And, but he, and he's like so iconic. Like you see him, you know it's him, and he had like, you know, his thick accent and everything. And it was cool to
And you said he was just like a little dude, right?
He's extremely small.
Yeah.
He was like like 5'6", 5'7".
I mean, I feel like.
Huh?
It's pretty normal, I feel like. They got to have the smaller guys to kind of get the
John Snow's not right. Big,
yeah,
dude.
Kit Harington.
No, Kit Harington, really not a big man, not a large man, no. So,
that show has guys who are, like, closer to 5 foot and close to 7 foot. There's, like, no way.
There's no way. Right, because yeah. you got Kit Harington, and you've got, like, the Mountain.
The Mountain, yeah, the Hound.
Stuff like that, so. Oh, man, always fun seeing celebrities out in the wild. In the meantime, let's do some news.
Let's do the news.
Starting in Atlanta, some bad news for the Falcons and for Devontae Freeman. He's got a foot sprain. He could miss the next couple of weeks in the Atlanta offense. So that means Brian Hill is next in line. And, I mean, Fabs, I would imagine he was a popular ad last night. And I think this is a good week to start him against that Panther defense.
Yeah, their defense has been awful against running backs, especially on the road this week. They're on their home field. Hill sort of projects as a guy who's like more of like a between the tackles kind of guy. He's more of a grinder. He's not like Freeman, who can catch a ton of balls out of the backfield. So I think he is an RB2 without question, potentially a very good flex starter, just based on the fact that workload appears to be, you know, imminent. And the matchup is extremely good.
Yeah, the Falcons are a really tough spot now. I mean, not only is Ito Smith on IR, not only now is Devonta Freeman hurt, they've now got to go to like Brian Hill and Kenyon Barner as their 3 and 4 backs here. So I'm with you. I'm fully expecting Brian Hill to get at least 20 touches in this spot. And this Panthers run defense has really struggled all year. I mean, they've been in like the bottom five of most run defense metrics all season.
Don't you figure they gave up, what, the 4-touchdown game to Tevin Coleman? They gave up, what, 3 to Aaron Jones last week? I mean, they have been getting shredded by a lot of running backs. So Brian Hill potentially is the next one in line to have a big game. Speaking of running back news, you'll be shocked to hear this, but Matt Breida is hurt again, guys.
Oh, wonderful.
I know that never happens. He has a sprained ankle. He is going for a second opinion on
this guy has
ankle.
A sprained ankle every
I,
other.
Right. I feel like he was born with a sprained ankle.
I mean, at this point, man, he just can't make it through a game healthy. It's just, I feel bad for him. It's getting sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough. Although, you know, we also remember last year when he had a sprained ankle and it seemed like he was on the point of amputation nearly, and we would make contingency plans, and he'd show up and he'd run for like 90 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, it was a game time decision like every game last year. And every single week he would ball out, do well.
It was amazing. But this looks like he actually may miss some time. Those are the reports that he will not be available to the 49ers for an indeterminate amount of time. So obviously, you know, that means Tevin Coleman probably takes on a bigger workload. But I mean, Graham, are we cool with Raheem Mostert if we have to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're truly desperate at the RB spot this weekend, you could roll out Mostert. He provided some decent flex value for you while Tevin Coleman was out earlier this year. But I just think this is another really good spot for Tevin Coleman to get going. I know you just mentioned that Panthers game. That was back now 2 weeks ago. Last 2 weeks have not been good for Coleman. He's been a little bit lower on the touch count. But with Matt Breida out of the lineup at home, favored against the Cardinals, should be a really good matchup for him to exploit.
Yeah. You know, it's so weird, though, on Monday night to see Mostert in kind of late in that game, especially in overtime.
It was, right? Yeah.
He was getting a lot of work there. So, you know, I still, as somebody who has Tevin Coleman on a couple of rosters, I'm hoping he gets a bigger workload without Breida. But, you know, Shanahanigans, man, it runs in the family, so you never really know.
By the way, speaking of that, Mr. Niners here, what was up with that coin toss thing?
So apparently,
what was up with that coin toss thing?
Apparently,
did you hear about that?
Yeah,
Gino says he called heads. Although he did have a tweet where he said hails. That was his tweet. I think to sort of poke fun at it.
Yeah.
Okay. But In fact, our own Jim Trotter was on NFL Now yesterday saying that he did talk to Geno Smith, and Geno said he called heads. Now, Geno also said he called heads because before the game, Russell Wilson had called tails, and so he felt like, I think the comment was something that mathematically the odds of it coming up heads were greater, which makes no sense at all because
that's not how it works.
Each coin flip is an individual event, and so the odds will always be 50-50. It doesn't ever change. But you do you, Gino. I mean, I guess it worked out.
It was
out.
So strange though, because like there was a clip on TMZ, and it was clear that he had said one thing, but then one of our researchers, Matt Frederick, showed me another video, and I listened to that, and
it's Laurel versus Yanni.
It sounded like the other thing.
Laurel versus Yanni, right? Like, it depends on where you're listening or who you are. Like, you probably heard different things. I guess my point to it, though, is that when the ref said heads, it is heads, nobody argued with it, right?
Yeah.
Like, when Jerome Bettis, the famous Jerome Bettis one happened, like, he actually, screamed and was upset.
That's a good point. I definitely feel like Richard Sherman, had he said tails,
would have been like, would have called
like,
it
whoa,
out.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right.
Richard
Sherman would have called it out. Like, nobody blinked an eye. You know, everybody just kind of went on about it. So I felt like the refs must have got it right.
Yeah.
Other injury news, Brandon Cooks has already been ruled out for the Rams Week 11 game as he continues to deal with concussion symptoms. From just a personal standpoint for him, this is, I think, kind of becoming disturbing a little bit. He's had a number of concussion issues. This one is starting to last a little bit longer, and so you sort of wonder about his long-term health there. So that's something definitely to be concerned about. For our perspective, though, Fabs, I mean, do we feel okay with Josh Reynolds? We know he's going to be on the field. He just seems like he's very risk-reward right
now. Bro, this offense is garbage right now.
Like, there's also that.
It's so strange to say that because of what they were last year, and we remember that Chiefs game and just
the Vikings game.
every week this offense, it's not the same offense, clearly. We're already in Week 11. I don't trust any Rams. I might trust Gerald Everett more than I trust any Ram. And that includes Todd Gurley.
Cooper Kupp?
Who didn't...
Last week was a bad week, but I still believe.
You have no catches. Yeah, the Cooper Kupp, I would trust as well. But it is one of those things where, like, man, you don't want shares of players who are borderline rosterable in your starting lineup when the offense is awful. So, and they're playing the Bears this week. This could end up being a low-scoring game. Heck, I'd be afraid of Robert Woods this week,
Cooper Kupp's going to have a nice bounce-back game. I don't think that's necessarily a bold call, but yeah, man, this Rams team is not. These are not the same Rams that we were expecting. These are not the same Rams that we had last year or the year before.
It's not, and it's a lesson to everybody out there that, you know what, just because something was great one season doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be great again.
Yeah,
and the Rams are proof of that.
And this is another brutal matchup here for Jared Goff. I mean, pressure heavy front seven, very talented front seven.
Don't want anything to do with him this week. I drop him.
I go back to, I feel like last year against the Bears, I think I said this earlier, like that's when sort of the decline started for Jared Goff, that they, they kind of beat him up a little bit. And I don't know if I can say this. I think he started seeing ghosts. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble now.
You're in trouble.
but he hasn't really been the same quarterback since then. We saw it all through the postseason, and we've seen it for quite a bit of this season.
You're going to have a very, very kind email in your inbox.
Yeah, I know. So if I'm not here next week, know that I love you all.
I'll stop.
A bit of news that actually just came across Twitter.com as we were sitting here and talking. The Bengals have cleared John Ross to return to practice. He's actually eligible to play in Cleveland, or at Cleveland, I should say, on December 8th. He can start practicing with the team now. I mean, look, the Bengals haven't really offered us much in terms of production, with a few maybe hits here and there. This basically means that John Ross is available for the fantasy playoffs. So week 14, they're at Cleveland. Week 15, they're home against the Patriots. Week 16, they are at Miami. Mm-hmm. Two of those three aren't terrible. I mean, when it comes time, if you need a wide receiver, would either of you consider John Ross?
Who's throwing passes to him?
Right, yeah.
Probably Ryan Finley.
It'll be Ryan Finley. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Finley last week and in the preseason just basically did not throw deep. And that's what we need for John Ross, right? I mean, we need Ross to get those deep targets. And with Finley back there, I have no confidence that they're going to get it going.
As an owner of Joe Mixon, I like Ryan Finley.
I saw a play where Ryan Finley was legitimately not pressured. Auden Tate was going down the field on the sideline, wide open. He just threw it out of bounds, just chucked it out of bounds, just threw it away. I mean, Finley was, I'll put it this way, he was interesting last week.
That's being kind.
Yeah, and he was so interesting that the Raiders are one of the top defensive streamers
of
the week.
Oh, no.
And they had a huge game last week against the Chargers.
Yeah. I mean, they played well against a good quarterback.
I know.
Now they get to face Ryan Finley.
Yeah, yeah. It's odd. It's always odd to put in a waiver claim for like the Raiders defense, though.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know what? Because I am haunted by the Nick Mullins game.
When Nick Mullins just shredded them.
About that.
Third string quarterback comes in,
and we all thought, hey, yeah, start the Raiders.
Ooh, the Raiders defense, and they sucked.
I think that was a third.
Yes, it was Yes.
I mean, look. If it makes you feel any better, it was a few years ago when I said the Raiders were a sleeper defense, and then Nick Foles threw 7 touchdowns. So,
yeah.
That part. So it happens. Last piece of news, Dwayne Haskins has been named the quarterback starter in Washington for the rest of the season. I mean, Graham, from a football standpoint, I'm curious to watch him play and see him develop and see what he can do. From a fantasy standpoint, RIP Terry McLaurin?
I will remember you.
The matchup is pretty good.
Yeah.
And with 4 teams off, would you guys completely fade Terry McLaurin?
Yes.
Like, you're not playing him.
Yes.
Like, you're gonna play Marvin Jones over him this week. Marvin Jones got a bad matchup with Jeff Driskel under center.
I can see.
I'm just asking.
Yeah.
I could see a way where I could flex McLaurin. And maybe this look, and I know this logic may be faulty sometimes, but it kind of falls back on the look, somebody's got to get targets in that offense sort of thing.
Yeah.
And McLaurin has been the guy who most consistently gets open.
Yeah, that's fair. And obviously the Jets is just such an easy draw, but Haskins this year, guys, has just been terrible. I mean, he's been awful. He's been terrible.
He's been awful.
He's played 96 snaps this year, and he's already thrown 4 picks and taken 8 sacks. That's not good.
That's
what
not
you're
good.
Saying
that's
is
not,
that the Jets are a second, for the second week in a row, are a great streamer.
Yeah.
Except that Danny Dimes actually had a good game against them.
No, I know, but they had 19 points.
True.
Yeah.
True.
I mean, 19 points.
Well, Jamal Adams just snatching the ball out of Jones' hand.
I like Jets D this week, and their run defense is really good. I think they can stop this Redskins run offense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Haskins, man. I think, you know, it depends on obviously who else you have on your bench. I think Marvin Jones versus McLaurin is really close. That's probably a really good 1v1.
I'd go with McLaurin, to be honest with you.
I would consider it too. That's a good one for sure. But I think at this point we just really have to temper expectations for McLaurin moving forward. And the matchup is right at least.
Yeah, yep. And I think that's kind of what you fall back on if you were faced with that decision with McLaurin or somebody else on your roster. So there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
Back here joining us again is our pal Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus. We love talking to him on Wednesdays, getting his take on the fantasy football world. Jeff, as always, appreciate your time. How are you feeling today?
I am feeling good. I guess I'm getting into that second wave where, after you stay up for 24 hours straight, you're good for another like 12 hours, right? That's how I feel right now. But hey, last week was crazy. A lot of stuff we didn't expect to see, we're seeing, and this just shows us the NFL every single week, unpredictable.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of unpredictable, I mean, let's start in that Cardinals backfield, right? Because we weren't quite sure what to expect with both David Johnson and Kenyon Drake being there. And it just, it was not great, especially if you had David Johnson in your lineup. It was not what you wanted to see. And so now that sort of begs the question, I mean, it looks like Kenyon Drake may be taking over. Maybe I'm wrong, but what do we do with David Johnson now?
Well, yeah, last week we kind of had the right idea, but the wrong players, right? We thought, all right, well, David Johnson's going to be sort of an RB2, and then Kenyon Drake kind of a flex type guy. Yeah, it was the other way around. And honestly, Johnson does not look like the player he was a few years ago. And it shouldn't be surprising that a 27-year-old running back is on the decline, but he's really not able to do anything independent of his blocking. This is a stat that I pointed out before he was hurt. I said that, so far this season, we had saw Chase Edmonds was very effective after contact. He was averaging over 3 yards after contact. That was before David Johnson got hurt. David Johnson was at 1.99. He is still at 1.99, remarkably after last week. But that is not good. The Mendoza line in baseball, we know that, you know, the batting average under two. Well, this is sort of a Mendoza line that we have here as well. This is not an area where we want to be. I want to see these guys at least 3 yards after contact per attempt. So unfortunately, right now, you're just hoping you can get flex value out of David Johnson going forward.
Hey, pal. So I consider you one of the best in the business. Love your stuff. And I like to pick some of my favorites, their brains, in terms of what their thought process is when they are putting together projections, starts and sits, that kind of thing. So last week, Philip Rivers was playing the Raiders, okay? And I knew that he had been bad in Oakland. But the Raiders' defense had been bad against quarterbacks, so everyone started Rivers, and he sucked, okay? Last week, Drew Brees was at home against Atlanta. Atlanta's defense was awful against quarterbacks. The Saints were coming off a bye. Brees sucked, 11 points. This week, everyone is all over Brees. He's going to bounce back. The Buccaneers are awful against quarterbacks, except that Brees has scored 14 or fewer fantasy points in four of his last five games in Tampa Bay, and he's averaging 15 points per game in his last 20 in outdoor road games. Which one makes more sense to you? Do I want to play the Brees is playing the Buccaneers now and they stink against quarterbacks, so he's a must start? Or am I playing Drew Brees is not reliable in outdoor road games and he has struggled in Tampa Bay in his career? I'm benching him.
Well, I hate to say it, but I'm going to go after the Buccaneers defense. I mean, it's just a okay. Simple fact of the matter is the defense is so bad. They're so bad that they cut Vernon Hargreaves.
Atlanta's defense was so bad.
Yeah, they just cut Vernon Hargreaves.
That's what I'm saying. I get it. But
which is insane. So,
no, I'm just saying, like, where, like, I'm not saying that, like, I have Brees and I'm playing him this week, but I love to dig into those little trends that might get people thinking. And so, obviously, Brees is a guy you're going to play, but we all thought he was going to be a great play last week, and he was terrible. So is there any hesitation for you? Like, if you have Josh Allen, would you play him over Drew Brees this week, knowing that Brees has struggled in outdoor road games and he has struggled in Tampa Bay?
Well, you know, it's surprisingly close. So to enter the week, I have Brees at 3 and Allen actually at 6. So I am pushing the chips in the middle on Allen this week. Mm-hmm. But I still think, you know, you have to make the strongest percentage plays. So that's that. You asked for the thought process. Yep. I often think not, am I playing this game this week one time only? I think in my mind, if I play this game 100 times, how many times would I start Drew Brees over Josh Allen? And it would certainly be more than 50% of the time. So therefore, I'm starting Drew Brees.
Gotcha.
I'm not saying it's 100% of the time, though, because I think there is some merit to Josh Allen this week. So it's a good point. Also, to build off of this really quickly, Drew Brees, terrible game. Michael Thomas, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
This guy is unbelievable. Yeah. Does he top 100 receptions this week? Like, this guy's going to set the record so high. This is going to be like the DiMaggio hitting streak. Why are we talking about baseball so much today? But it's going to be so high. This is unreal. The guy has the highest fantasy floor of any player that I can remember.
It's insane. I mean, it's like every single week. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter the matchup. Doesn't matter who's covering him. Doesn't matter who's throwing the ball to him. I mean, even with Teddy Bridgewater, Michael Thomas was still doing Michael Thomas things. It's absurd.
So what we didn't see in Arizona, I feel like we did see in Cleveland with their running backs, with Kareem Hunt, you know, working with Nick Chubb there. He spent a lot of time, Hunt did, kind of as a pass catcher and really, you know, gave some pretty decent numbers there. So now, are we comfortable with him as a flex at least for the rest of the season? Or is this maybe was just a 1 week kind of tryout thing?
No, I think we are. I was expecting Duke Johnson plus in the offense with Kareem Hunt. And that's pretty much what we got. Everybody who was panicking with Nick Chubb, he still had 20 carries. He's, you know, you think like 18 to 22 carries for Nick Chubb, one or two receptions, and then Kareem Hunt will clean up the rest of the carries. So 4, 5, 6 carries. But he could, you know, this guy can easily catch 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 balls a game going forward here. So definitely, especially if you're in a PPR format, even half point PPR, you can get away with him as a flex or better. And he looked pretty good. And it's interesting. That was a tough game. Like, that's a tough defense that they went up against. And Cleveland didn't look phenomenal on the offensive side of the ball, but it looked a little bit different out there with Hunt than it did before he returned from suspension. So I think this is interesting going forward.
There's this chatter. And maybe it's just internet chatter. Maybe it's just scuttlebutt because the Giants aren't playing well. But now, you know, just all of a sudden this talk yesterday of Saquon Barkley being shut down for the season popped up. And, you know, he's denying it. Pat Shurmur is denying it. But, you know, you got to feel like it's coming from somewhere. Is this something we should pay attention to, or is this just, you know, the New York media trying to create a story because the Giants are bad?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, right? And you know, initially when that injury happened, we heard a 4 to 8 week timetable. And I was hearing rumblings behind the scenes that it was going to be closer to 8 weeks. And obviously, Barkley rushed back, got back on the field, and credit where credit's due. The dude wants to compete, and you got to give him that. But maybe he did come back a little too early. That being said, I don't think he gets shut down, just the type of player that he is. Also, though, it is that time of year where it is handcuff season. So Wayne Gallman, if he's available on waivers, you got to scoop him up. We know he'll be a factor. He's not Saquon Barkley, but in December fantasy football, every year there are guys who aren't the best running backs who end up helping you win a championship. So we got to scoop guys like him up just in case.
So we talked some baseball. Let's talk a little basketball. Are you buying this LeSean McCoy, Kawhi Leonard load management thing? Are you buying this argument?
That is hilarious. That was exactly what I was going to say. What is this basketball? I love the Michael Jordan quote, by the way. Michael Jordan told his players, you're paid to play 82 games, which I respect that. But anyway, I don't buy it. I don't buy it one bit. McCoy had a little bit of burst like an older running back will in September, but started to fade in October. And at this point, you know, it didn't look like the Damian Williams thing was going to actually happen this year. Well, now it does. And he's looked pretty decent. They're giving him volume. Obviously, hey, your numbers are going to be skewed when you have a long touchdown run. But the fact of the matter is he's capable of that long touchdown run. We've already seen it happen once. So I actually like him going forward. And if you have LeSean McCoy at this point, I really don't have any issue dropping him. Yeah. In our handcuff chart, I actually changed everything. So now I have Damian Williams is obviously the lead guy and Darrell Williams is the priority handcuff.
I think that makes sense. I mean, LeSean McCoy, even to start the year, I don't think he was really blowing anybody out of the water. But like you mentioned, I think his play really started to fade late. And Damian Williams has played well over 70% of the Chiefs snaps now in back-to-back games. So it does look like at least he's going to get the featured role and get the shot to get a featured role down the stretch here.
Is O.J. Howard back in our lives? Or was this just he was playing the Cardinals and, you know, tight ends versus the Cardinals, et cetera, et cetera?
It's really that. And please be what is George Kittle? Is he going to score 4 touchdowns? You know, like what is he going to do in this matchup? Even Ross Dwelly, if he can't go, then he's going to be interesting at least. Now, the thing about it, though, is it was the obvious call of the year, stream O.J. Howard last week. But I'm hoping that there's just the tiniest bit of a chance that this kind of gets things moving in the right direction for him. I don't expect him to be anything better than a fringe tight end one the rest of the way. But when I go through my rankings every single week, I stop at about the 7th or 8th tight end. And then literally from that tight end until like the 22nd, 23rd, 24th tight end, it is all the same guy. They're all 3 for 32 tight ends. And whether they score a touchdown or not is whether you think they're good or not. Right. And that was what Howard was last week. Basically, pretty much he got in the end zone, though, so he was a good play. So I think we should be looking at him as a streamer, depending on the weeks going forward. This week's going to be interesting. Not having Lattimore, though, very likely should mean a lot of the wide receivers. So I don't think this is going to be a big O.J. Howard week.
You know, you talk about those kind of like middle road, you know, kind of bottom tier tight ends. And I always feel like when I get a question on Twitter or something about, you know, choosing between some of these tight ends, it's almost like do I flip a coin? Do I pull out the magic eight ball? Like, how do I just kind of determine? Because you're right. There's so many of these guys are so much the same. And it really is just about whether or not they can kind of figure out their way into the end zone to make this thing happen. It's, I don't know. Will it get better next year? I know we say this every year, Jeff. Will it get better next year at tight end?
Well, I tell you what, the thing that I like about the young tight ends today is they're not like, and it's not to knock Jason Witten, but the big lumbering, you know, 5-0-40 tight ends, right? They're good both ways. They can block, et cetera. That tight end is being replaced by some of these guys. I mean, you look at Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson, who is a two-way tight end, Irv Smith, who's emerging now. These guys are super athletic. When you're talking a guy like an Evan Engram, who can run a 4-4-40 at his size. This is a totally different dynamic. Dallas Goedert, like I think it will get better. It's just like anything with tight end. It's going to take us a little bit of time. It takes time for these guys to develop. But in 3 or 4 years, knock on wood right now, I'm knocking loud. let's hope that we actually have at least a dozen tight ends who we can start each week.
That knocking on wood thing actually seems to work. The Raiders aren't doing
it. It worked for John Gruden, right?
I was about to say, tight end's going to bounce back in 2020. Knock on wood if you're with
me. Knock on wood if you're with me. There you go. Jeffs, will let you go. Remind all the folks where they can go out and find your stuff.
Absolutely. Over at PFF.com, all the content there. And you can check me out on social, Twitter, and Instagram is at Jeff Ratcliffe.
Hey, appreciate it as always. Be good, man.
See you, pal.
You guys too.
Thanks again to Jeff Ratcliffe for his time. I think we'll talk to him in a couple weeks. In fact, just before Thanksgiving will be the next time we check in with Jeff. But I'm sure you will check in with him, Fabs, like you said. If Drew Brees goes south.
Yeah. It's almost like the...
I don't mean directionally.
No. Well, he is going south. He is going south. Like, isn't it south?
Yeah, it's like southeast.
Southeast. Probably more east than south. Yeah. But
it's like the nurture versus nature thing, right? Like where people want to know, well, are people born that way? Are they raised that way? That kind of thing. Is it more important to look at a player's trend in a specific place or what's going on right now?
Right.
And last week against Rivers and the Raiders, which I mentioned... Rivers sucked against a really bad Oakland defense, and he had been bad in Oakland in, I believe, 3 of his 4 previous games. So it's interesting to see what happens. I just like throwing that stuff out there and seeing what some of the smart minds say about it.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so as we kind of start to look ahead for some of you out there who maybe have not had the best fantasy season and are starting to kind of plan next year. Last week we talked about running backs and maybe some guys who will move up into the third round and guys who will fall out of the top 3 rounds. Figured to do the same with some wide receivers, which maybe was a little bit tougher in some respects. So I sort of tweaked it a little bit. I do have 3 wide receivers who were, right around the top 3 rounds in most leagues who... may or may not be there next year. And so I think on the surface, it's easy to look at these names and say, no way. So I'm going to be devil's advocate and sort of try to make a case for how they could possibly stay in the top 3 rounds. And you guys can tell me if I'm full of crap or not. the first one, Odell Beckham Jr., who has been one of the bigger disappointments easily in fantasy football this year. And it's not totally on him. And I guess that's my point, right? It hasn't totally been his fault. Baker Mayfield has struggled. He has looked panicked in the pocket a lot this year. The offensive line has had issues. Yep. Freddie Kitchens play calling has left a lot to be desired at times. So it hasn't been an issue of Odell suddenly forgetting how to play football. It's that everything around him has sort of been bad. But look, the Browns the last couple of weeks have started to kind of put some things together. They get a nice win against the Buffalo Bills. Maybe things are starting to kind of gel a little bit, and maybe the end of the season, with it being an easier schedule, is enough to kind of get this offense going and maybe get it confidence going into next year. So if you spin that narrative in your head the way I just did, can you convince yourself that maybe Odell sneaks into the back end of the third round next year?
Probably. I would think so. I mean, still one of the most talented guys. The Browns have to address their offensive line in the offseason. I don't know if Freddie Kitchens is going to be the coach there next year. So there's a lot of things that are sort of still up in the air.
The Browns will have a new coach next year.
But I would say he's still a borderline top 30 pick.
Yeah, the Browns will have a new coach next year. And that'll I think, swing a lot of people's opinions based on who they get, what kind of offense we're looking at. And I mean, the Freddie Kitchens experiment. I mean, I was excited. I think we all were, but it is definitely not gone to expectation.
No,
has not worked out.
No,
hasn't worked out at all. All right, so that went better than I thought it would. the next one, I'll have to spin Juju Smith-Schuster again. Another one of the huge disappointments this year. I guess my only response to it is, look, man, we didn't know Ben Roethlisberger's arm was going to disintegrate sometime in week one, and then he was going to have to deal with Mason Rudolph, Devlin Hodges for a week. Obviously losing Lev Bell and Antonio Brown takes a lot out of the offense, but losing Ben Roethlisberger, you literally have lost the trigger man that throws the football there. I don't expect Juju to be a second-round pick next year the way he was this year, but I think we can, again, if Roethlisberger is coming back the way he says, we can talk ourselves into the top 3 rounds again, right?
Juju is going to be, I think, the most obvious bounce back candidate of the season next year. It'll make sense. I mean, Big Ben will be back, hopefully. He still has a few years left on his deal, and I'm pretty sure he's been pretty adamant that I think
he says he wants to come back.
He wants to come back for another year. Juju's going to be a great bounce back candidate. I think everybody's going to be on, and if he slips into that like early third round range, I foresee myself taking him quite often in that in that spot.
All right. So last one for that group, Julian Edelman, who right now is the wide receiver 9.
He's the wide receiver 9 every single year.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, like it, right? He goes no higher than 6, and he goes like no lower than 12. It's great.
As long as he's just doesn't right get there. Hurt or suspended, that's where he ends
up. Right. So he's wide receiver 9 right now as we speak. Look, and every year, right, we'll get to July and we'll get to August, and it'll be the, like, how much longer can Tom Brady play? I mean, you know, at some point, the Browns, the Patriots offense is going to start to fall apart, right? There's going to be a decline. They're going to bring in a new wide receiver, right? I mean, hey, look, maybe N'Keal Harry develops a little bit more. Maybe we find somebody else. Maybe they draft somebody. They pick somebody up in free agency, right? And that'll be the beginning of the end for Julian Edelman. You know, and I say this, and then we'll get to next November, and he'll be the wide receiver 9 again. But are we going to possibly talk ourselves out of Julian Edelman being a top 3 round pick?
So we assume Tom Brady's back.
Right. He says he's going to play until like he's 50.
I mean, we also assume that the Patriots aren't bringing in any other big name receivers. Like, you could totally see AJ Green going to the Patriots, right? I would think Patriots or maybe the Raiders that could end up being. But so as things stand, I'd probably still look at him as more of like a fourth round pick. So I don't know if he's top 30.
I think with one thing that I've made a mistake on this year is like, there are pockets in team building, right, where you need to draft for upside. And we just mentioned where Julian Edelman does not have a ton of, like, he's not going to finish top 3 or top 4 of the position. And it always comes down, I think, to me is, like, what's your team build look like? You know, if you just need a solid receiver to a solid floor of points, Edelman's always a great option in the third or fourth round. But Chris Godwin was a fourth round pick this year, and there's still plenty of times where I took Edelman over Godwin, and plenty of people took Godwin over Edelman. So it always comes down to kind of like what the risk profile is. And Edelman will be 33 next year. You know, that's not exactly the age I think you want to be drafting receivers at.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of the potential free agent wide receivers. You mentioned AJ Green is one. I mean, Amari Cooper technically could hit free agency, although I would imagine the Cowboys are going to get
better not. Done.
Oh,
just the way
I'd imagine the Cowboys are going to get something done to keep him there. So I sort of think that he's kind of out of play for most teams there. But I don't know that it's a really great free agent wide receiver class. I mean, Robbie Anderson, which Robbie Anderson seems like the kind of thing Bill Belichick will do just to like pump him for information. Not that they need more information to beat the Jets, but like that just seems like a Bill Belichick signing anyway. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Okay. So, we'll flip now to guys who I'm pretty sure all these guys are going to end up in the top 3 rounds, but it's just a question of how high into the top 3 rounds do these guys go? Like, some of them creep into round 1. Are they, you know, high second round picks? Where are they? The first one, and you sort of touched on him a little bit, Graham, Chris Godwin, who's been fantastic. It's wild. You look at the wide receiver standings. Michael Thomas is number 1, no shock. 2 and 3 are both Buccaneers.
Yep.
Mike Evans at 2, Chris Godwin at 3. Both those guys have been lights out so far this year.
Although Godwin has slowed over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
The part of it is he came out the gate so quickly.
Smoking
hot. You know, I mean, he had a 41. He went 41 points in week 4, 31 points in week 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think he's sort of coming back.
Who gets picked ahead of who next year?
I think Godwin goes first. I think because of youth.
Evans has got. I mean, Evans ain't an old man.
No,
got 3 games with 36 or more points this year.
No,
and it's week 11.
Yeah, it's so both of them have just had unbelievable, just Looney Tune ceilings.
Right,
they're just putting up unbelievable numbers. I think both will be probably back in first round picks next year. I think that's what we're probably looking at. I think I'd go Godwin just because of his role in that offense, just the slot receiver role. He's going to catch a few more balls. He's already got 6 more catches this year. But Evans's yardage ceiling is just so crazy because Jameis loves throwing him the rock downfield.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about Godwin jumping into the first round. Does Nuke fall out of the first round next year?
He'll be in that discussion. He'll be right around there with Evans and Godwin, I bet you.
Yeah, I mean, and look, you look at his catch numbers, like, they're fine. I mean, you know, he's still among the league leaders in receptions, and the yards have been okay. It's just the touchdowns haven't quite been there. But I know that, you know, he has frustrated a lot of us because he hasn't had these big blow-up weeks. But, you know, his production has been pretty good as well. Tyler Lockett, who right now is the wide receiver 5 and is a guy that we all loved coming into the season, and I think he's exceeded even a lot of those expectations, easily a top 3-round pick. Does he have enough, you guys, to crack that first round, or is he still kind of maybe a second round guy?
I think he'll be a second round pick this year, but or next year. But Lockett, man, he's tied for 4th among all receivers in receptions, which is just, it's kind of crazy to think about for a Seahawks receiver.
Right.
I know, right?
Russell Wilson is just, he's peppering his dude with targets, and they're extremely, extremely efficient together. I think we're going to be looking at a couple years here where Lockett's going to put together back-to-back top 12 receiver 1 numbers with Wilson.
And still, you know, still a very young man.
Lockett's 27.
Yeah.
Right.
It feels like he's been in the league for a while.
For a while?
He has been in the league for a while. It's taken him a while to, you know, kind of break out and get this full-time role.
I remember when he was just irrelevant for the most part. You know?
Yeah.
But what's funny is that actually was also the case with Doug Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
When Doug Baldwin started his career, he wasn't really all that great, and then he sort of, like, developed into
really good years.
Really great seasons.
Right.
Yeah. It took Golden Tate a little bit of time to get going, too, in Seattle.
True. That's true. I mean, I guess that's what happens, though, when you are trying to run the ball. Right. Like, you're force-feeding the run.
Yeah.
That sort of thing happens. Kenny Golladay, who, again, another guy who, you know, I said this before. He said before the season that, you know, he could be a 100-catch guy. I said it probably won't happen in this offense. I don't think it will happen in this offense. I think he's at, what, 38 receptions, something like that. I mean, but he is a big play guy. He's a guy who finds the end zone a lot. And, you know, what, second round for Kenny Golladay? Does that seem reasonable for next season?
Second round, I don't know. I think he's more of a third rounder.
I think so, too.
And yeah, I think he's more of a third rounder.
I think we all were kind of on this year. It's like, you know, Kenny Golladay was a 4th-round pick. Marvin Jones was eighth, ninth-round pick. Which one would you rather have? And it'll come down to that again.
Yeah.
Although I will say Marvin Jones will be, I think he's getting up there, too. He's getting like 30, 31 next year.
Marvin Jones is also, I mean, he's had huge games, and then he's had stinkers.
He's a roller coaster.
Golladay has definitely been way more consistent. He's had the way more consistent role in this offense.
And we also need to see where these two guys end up at the end of the season and what the situation is going to be with Matthew Stafford, who, oh, by the way, I miss him already, man. I've got so many shares of Golladay, and now, like, this week.
Hey, Golladay came through last week.
I know, but it was
like one play.
It was like that one, you know, basically Driscoll threw it up 50-50 ball, and Golladay came down there, right?
Yeah.
Like, this week, and a lot of people, I think, have a similar situation. So I have Golladay. He's playing against my beloved Dallas Cowboys. And I've got Joe Mixon. And I don't know which one to start. And if it was Stafford under center, it's a no-brainer. It's freaking Golladay. But now, I don't know.
You're saying you don't trust Jeff Driscoll?
I'm not sure. I mean, like, the Cowboys' defense is tough. Look at Stephon Diggs didn't do a thing last week. It was all Kyle Rudolph. But so that doesn't mean TJ Hockenson's a start this week, guys, by the way. But so, yeah, I mean, now I'm in a situation where, like, I legitimately don't know if I should start Mixon over Golladay this week. I have to think on that one.
Wow. All
right. Right? I mean, like, it's...
No, I mean, it's not...
I mean, Mixon's had 2 good games in a row. He's playing the Raiders this week. If they're going to give him that kind of volume, like, that was a game script where the running back should have been completely irrelevant. And they gave him 30 touches.
Right.
They're getting crushed.
I will say Gio Bernard got hurt in that game.
No, yeah. I get it. I get it. But still, I don't know how many of those touches that you know, Mixon would have lost to Gio. It wouldn't have been that many. Maybe he had 25.
Right.
You know, who knows? But it's a tough one.
Mixon's kind of quietly bounced back these last 2 weeks. Yeah. Two pretty solid games.
Yep.
And 2 tough matchups.
Sure.
Because he had the Rams overseas and then last week against Baltimore.
Here's a question for you. Because you're expressing your frustration about Kenny Golladay this week. If you had to choose between Kenny Golladay and Terry McLaurin this week, what are you doing?
Oh, I'd go Golladay.
If Case Keenum was the quarterback, that might be a different answer.
Without a doubt.
But he's not. Yeah. So I'd probably still go Golladay there. But here's the thing. Like, if Stafford's the quarterback, you're like, I don't even care if Case Keenum's the quarterback in Washington.
No.
Golladay's the guy.
If the two teams have their veteran starters in there, then it's still Golladay.
Yeah, I mean, if Keenum were back there, I think McLaurin would pretty easily be a top 15 play this week. But now with Haskins, he's 30-ish.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Last one here, Cooper Kupp. And, you know, notwithstanding his 0.0 fantasy points that he provided you, has still been outstanding. He is he and Gerald Everett have kind of been the two things that have been the most consistent in this Rams offense probably over the last month or so. Cooper Kupp has been pretty consistent all season long.
Yep.
And he was kind of, what, a fourth, fifth round pick this past year. I know everyone's going to have concerns about who Jared Goff is and what this Rams offense is going to be next year, but does that preclude Cooper Kupp from maybe sneaking into the third round?
Cooper Kupp's going to be the constant in this offense every single year. Brandon Cooks, we will have to see what his health situation looks like. Robert Woods will be another year older, but I think Cooper Kupp is just the constant in this offense every year. He'll be the Goff's red zone guy. The Rams, their biggest problem this offseason is they have got to address the offensive line. The only issue is I have no idea where the cash flow or draft picks are going to come from to address it. It's not like free agency has been chock full of great offensive linemen either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
no doubt about it.
That's sort of it, too.
But
so.
Kupp has been, I mean, you know, we were all sort of discussing, because he was coming off the ACL, you know, this year. You know, we were all basically saying, you know, is it Woods? Is it Brandon Cooks? And then when Kupp started to get healthier, it looked like he was going to be okay. He moved up a little bit, but now the clear-cut Rams wide receiver you want to target next year is Cooper Kupp, no question about that. Robert Woods has morphed back into the Buffalo Robert Woods, and it's not fun. When you have
he's just not scoring touchdowns. He's gotten really unlucky with touchdowns this year.
But even that,
and
I mean,
it's because
like,
Goff has regressed so much. I mean, yeah. This Rams offense is just not in the red zone.
I know, and you know, I was talking to Maurice Jones-Drew, who covers the Rams, does the radio calls, and you know, I'm asking him like, why don't they give the ball to Gurley? I mean, 16 minutes and not one single touch in a game that was close, and the Steelers' defense is so tough against the pass, and Jared Goff is not a good quarterback, and you know, like honestly, MJD's like. I don't know. And you know, when a guy like that with so much knowledge and he has such an intimate relationship with the team and he's, I don't know. Like, at this point, I feel like maybe it's just McVay's, he's just stubborn.
That he's, you're trying to be
he's just stubborn
too smart
and, like,
for his own good sometimes.
I mean, and he just wants to keep throwing the ball. Like, okay, well, you're going to lose games. But that's another interesting thing, too, here. And Grandma and I will talk about this on Friday's podcast, but I want to get your take on this.
Okay.
Gurley with... a couple of old linemen down for the Rams against the Bears, who have gotten crushed by running backs for the last 4 or 5 weeks. Where are you projecting him this week? I mean, I said this on Monday, that if they don't give the ball to Gurley this week, then he's done. You're never going to be able to trust him again. Not that you can trust him now. But what do you think about Gurley this week?
I mean, I think he'll give you an average game. You know, like, I don't think if you're looking for the big blow up, if you're looking for the 20-point Todd Gurley game, like, I think you're going to be disappointed. I mean, I think, you know, right now, a nice game out of Todd Gurley is he gets you somewhere around 15, 16 points. And I'm not totally sure he gets that.
I mean, so sad.
I would say looking 12 to 14 point range for Todd Gurley. Hopefully he gets you a touchdown, but I don't know that the touches are going to be there.
He's touchdown dependent.
Yeah. He's completely touchdown dependent. We've talked about this a couple times here this season, but just the lack of targets and basically him not being used at all in the passing game. All those targets are now going to Gerald Everett.
That is the big shocker, yeah. That he's just not a part of the. Of the passing game.
Right now, you know, you're looking at a guy who was you know, probably end of the second round. Most people were taking him mid to end of the second round, who legitimately might not be a top 50 pick next year. Honestly, yeah.
It depends, right, exactly.
But I mean, he's another year older,
right?
I mean, like, so why would they suddenly go back to using him, you know, 25 times a game when they're not doing it now? And he's healthier than he's ever been in any November in the NFL.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's
right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I think we're gonna get kind of a consensus, I think, on Gurley early next offseason. You know, people will kind of have their opinions formed of him, and I think it's going to be hard to kind of move off of that. And, you know, depending on what the Rams do in free agency in the draft will also have an impact on that, whether or not they decide to, you know, give Daryl Henderson some more, they work Malcolm Brown in, whatever they decide
to
do.
He's got 15 catches.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and seven of those came in one
game. Yes, in one game.
Against the Bucks.
Yeah. Jeez
Louise. I mean, like... he would have 6-7 catch games regularly.
Yeah.
regularly.
And those games would go for like 80 yards just receiving alone.
Yeah.
And then you'd add all the juice with the rushing. But so.
All right. Let's talk some drops or not drops. And let's just start with Jared Goff. I mean, at this point, I have a hard time coming up with a reason for you to hold on to him unless you're in a 2 QB league. But I think in most leagues,
goodbye.
He can kind of be gone, right?
Agreed.
Yep.
See ya. Move on. Even I would start Kyle Allen over him this week.
Yeah,
I think that's where we're at. I mean, you gotta dig deep for some streamers for against Goff this week, because it's just the upside is just not there anymore.
This one might be a little tougher to swallow, but Philip Rivers, who the last few weeks hasn't been particularly great.
That's an understatement.
The schedule is not really super. I mean, he's got the Chiefs this week, which has sort of been a middle of the road matchup. Then they have a bye in week 12. After that, he's at Denver. He's at Jacksonville again, sort of middle of the road. He's got the Vikings. Mm-hmm. It's not the worst schedule, but it's also not the best schedule. And for a guy who's not playing particularly well, there are a lot of good streamers out there, and I don't know that I'm necessarily wasting a roster spot on Philip Rivers if I can't trust him.
No, I know. I get it. And, you know, at this point of the season, you know, especially if you have, like, one of the better quarterbacks, more reliable quarterbacks. I only have one on my roster, you know. I don't need to have two quarterbacks. I'd rather load up on other positions. But he's got the Chiefs this week, though. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, last week, Raiders. Oh, man, you know, he was a top 10 potentially at quarterback, and he did nothing. And now the game is in Mexico on Monday night. He's got the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, you know, the quarterbacks have been okay against them this season. So it's one of those, what do you have as an alternative on your roster, for example? If you have Josh Allen, I could see, you know, I don't know if I could see cutting Rivers because Allen's schedule gets really tough. Mm-hmm. So it really all depends. Like, if Jameis Winston is your quarterback, then maybe you cut him, okay? If you're looking to pick up a hot free agent. But Rivers is at, this is one of his worst fantasy seasons. One of his worst. And we've also seen that switch to going to Melvin Gordon and the running game now with Wisenhunt no longer there. So Melvin Gordon's going to eat. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who right. went from, like, should I start him or not, to, like, oh, dude, this guy's a must start. I mean, in the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. So, you know, this week is going to tell us a lot about Rivers and whether or not we're going to be able to trust him, because right now you can't.
I'm with you. Gordon and Eckler are both going to have really nice games.
Huge games.
Chiefs. They have their bye. Rivers has his bye in week 12, and they mm-hmm. come back and they play at Denver. So I think if you do have a Josh Allen or maybe somebody else you feel more comfortable yep. with, these next, you know, 3 weeks, you could, you know, you're not going to be using Rivers at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's I think I probably siding with Graham there. But again, it all depends on what you have right. on your roster. So.
All right. Jeff Ratcliffe sort of touched on this, but LeSean McCoy, I mean, the load management thing, like it was hard enough to kind of justify holding on to LeSean McCoy because the production wasn't there. And now if we're going to have to deal with every other week or so, he's just sitting out. Like, there's just no way.
Yeah,
right?
it's over. I actually think Darrell Williams might end up being the number two there by the season's end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's over for McCoy. I think you can set him free.
Man. Robbie Anderson, is it over for him too? I mean, last week seemed to be a great matchup. He had one catch for 11 yards.
Demaryius Thomas is getting more targets.
Demaryius Thomas right. is getting some looks.
That was exactly what I was going to say. If Demaryius Thomas is getting more looks than you and you're failing against, you know, in these just awesome matchups, he failed against the Dolphins 2 weeks ago too. It's just, it's over for Robbie as well, which is sad because I thought he had just an absurd ceiling in this offense. But
when he had that big game, was that against the Cowboys?
It was. He had a 90,
I remember,
it was a 90-yard reception.
I remember like that, picking him up. And thinking, well, this could help me down the stretch. And then Sam Darnold started seeing stuff that wasn't there. And Demaryius Thomas is getting all the targets, aside from clearly Jameson Crowder, who's getting a lot of options opportunities as well.
Yeah. So, last one, Jimmy Graham. And I know, Fabs, you were sort of railing against Jimmy Graham earlier in the week. Is he done? I mean, even at a thin tight end spot,
it doesn't matter. Like, he's a name, and that's it. Like, a lot of people, you fall in love with names. Now, there have been some games this season where, you know, the matchup's been good, and then you know, you potentially stream him. But if I'm gonna have a tight end on my roster who has a bye, I'm picking up Jacob Hollister. I'm not sitting on Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham has had fewer than 8 fantasy points in 3 straight games and in, let's see, 5 of his last 6. I mean, that's awful. You know what I mean? Like, he's touchdown dependent. He's had one good game. That was against Oakland where he had over 16 fantasy points, and that's it. Like, and now they're running the ball so much with Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. Davante Adams is back. If you have Graham on your roster and Hollister's available, pick up Hollister, dump Graham. He is not worth a roster spot at this point. He's just not. Man. And, I mean, after the bye, guess what? They got San Francisco. Have fun with that.
Man, remember.
And they got Chicago in week 15.
Remember Jimmy Graham? Like, those were the days.
He was so good. We had those Gronk. Were the days. We had Gronk those years, like back in the early, you know, like 2012, 2013. Tight end was so hot back
so
then.
So nice.
Tony Gonzalez was balling out his year, end of his career
in Atlanta.
It was a good time. It was a good time to be a tight end.
It was really fun to have tight ends in your lineup.
Now we have like three good players.
That's it. And then some of those are getting hurt. That's the worst part.
Right.
So
yeah, Austin Hooper, our tight end one, is hurt.
Poor little out. Yeah. Oh, man.
And Evans hurt.
Kittle is hurt.
Kittle's hurt. It's.
I'm going to be so sad if George Kittle can't play this week against the Cardinals. Like, how unfair will that be?
Right.
Best matchup of the year he's going to get at home against the Cardinals, and he's hurt.
He had a good game against them a couple of weeks ago,
too. They played on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's the game he got hurt in. He battled through that and got it done.
Man.
Yep.
Wow, what a downer to end the show on.
I know, right?
And that's the show.
But hey, you know, maybe we give some people some tight ends that they're going to be able to trust this week, right? So if Adam Thielen is out again,
then Kyle Rudolph is back in your life.
Kyle Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, is back in your life. I mean, he was a streamer for us last week, had a couple of touchdowns against my boys, and he's getting more opportunities, especially in the red zone. Greg Olsen's a good play this week. Gerald Everett's a good play this week. Jack Doyle has had three straight games with double-digit fantasy points.
I kind of like Noah Fant as a streamer this week.
I do like Noah Fant this week for Denver against Minnesota.
If you were able to get Jared Cook this week, great matchup against Tampa. So, I mean,
there are options. It's just not as sexy as it's.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're basically just, putting a dude into your starting lineup and crossing your fingers that, he gets you.
He scores a touchdown.
Like, honestly, like, if you get 7 points from a tight end right now, you're like,
you're feeling okay.
Exactly.
Like, that's all right.
Like Jeff mentioned, if you get those three catches for 30 yards and you just feel comfortable with them,
then you're fine.
Yeah. You're good.
This is where we are now. Uh-huh. All right. That's it. We are done. We appreciate you listening and downloading, as always. Thanks again to Jeff Ratcliffe for his time. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, date someone who has a different favorite cereal than you so they won't eat yours. We'll see you on Friday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.